I'm doing well, Alex Gertzberg. I don't actually know your middle initial.
It's E.
E. Yeah. All right, Alex E. Gertzberg.
Yeah, do you know what the E stands for?
I have no idea.
Edward.
All right. That's yeah. a solid yeah. one.
So we are here to talk about hemp, Nick. And yeah. and today is a, I believe, an opportune day to talk about hemp because there have been some goings on in Columbus.
Yes.
Yes. With respect to hemp, what are those goings on?
So this is very exciting, especially for people who were there for the glacial rollout of Ohio's medical marijuana program. The Department of Agriculture has already, and this is blinding speed compared to last time, issued draft regulations for those who are trying to get involved and who want to become cultivators and processors of hemp. We're not talking about marijuana. We're talking about hemp, which is statutorily defined. Anything with 0.3% or less THC in the actual stock and the actual product. This is hemp that we're talking about.
Which has, if I'm not mistaken, a lot more industrial applications, a lot more applications in general than cannabis does.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So we're talking about making things out of a plant, with the exception of CBD, and I'll talk about that in a little bit. But really, we're talking about taking this plant, taking this stock, taking these leaves, and making things out of it. And there are so many things you can, you know, aside from the obvious things like paper and consumer canvas and rope and all these other things, you get into really cool material sciences. Hempcrete is a really cool application as a competitor to concrete, as the name suggests, but substantially greener. You know, you give up a little bit in your efficiency on it, but not a whole lot. And it's comparable in price. And so, especially when we're having issues with concrete, especially finding appropriate sand for our suppliers and stuff right now, hempcrete is a really cool way to apply this product in construction.
So what happened in Columbus this week?
Sure. So the Department of Agriculture has issued our draft regulations for both cultivators and processors, and there are just so low barriers to entry for either those who want to grow or those who want to process the hemp from its raw materials into other forms, be that the fiber, be that the cellulose for things like polymer and plastic applications, or even for those who are trying to get into CBD processing. Right now, all of that is done out of state because there's no way to do it up until this time to process that stuff in state. These rules are out. They are out for public comment. Public comment is going to be closed on November 1st, so not a whole lot of time to make any changes, which means that, you know, these draft regulations are likely going to be the final version with just some minor modification.
So let's break down the two sort of constituencies we're talking about. We're talking about processors and we're talking about cultivators.
Yes.
First, what's the difference?
So a cultivator is someone who is growing the plant. So think farmer, and it is farmers. And the majority of people who are going to be applying for these licenses are farmers who either are replacing a crop with hemp or getting additional growing space to grow hemp as a product that they're going to be selling. And processors, as the name implies, are the guys purchasing the supply that's been grown by the cultivators, by the farmers, and turning it into something else.
And so if I, excuse me, if I am one or the other in Ohio, what kinds of rules and regulations am I likely to have to follow in light of the new regs that just came down from the Department of Agriculture?
Sure. So you've got the obvious stuff, which are the regulations that came out here. But because this is going to be an agricultural product, and the farmers are going to already be familiar with this, but anyone coming into this is going to be less familiar, you're going to have to comply not only with the Department of Agriculture here, but also food and health and safety regulations on both the state and the federal level. Especially if these products are going to be intended to be consumed in some way. And if you're doing CBD, it's intended to be consumed in some way. So you're going to have to become familiar, if you're not already familiar, with those state and federal regulations. And that's going to apply to processors too. You know, the draft processing regs as we have them explicitly state that your processed hemp is going to have to comply with federal food health and safety regulations. And that's a little different if you're already in the manufacturing sector and you want to get into that. That's another set of regs that you're probably not familiar. If you're in the polymer business, for example, that's a whole other set that you don't have to follow, but you're going to have to follow if you're getting into this business.
So let's get practical, right? I mean, without question, anyone who wants to be a cultivator or a processor needs to get familiar with those rules. And by the way, they can freely contact you here at the Gertzberg Law Firm. You'll point them in the right direction. But give us a 40,000-foot view as a practical matter. What am I, if I want to be a cultivator or a processor, going to be doing to become one under state and federal law?
Sure. So to navigate these regulations, you're going to have to, this is very similarly to the way that we did it for the medical marijuana, you're going to have to show everything that you're doing. You're going to have to show who all your investors are, anyone who has 10% or greater interest in your company in order to get this license. You're going to have to submit a business plan, production plan, as to what you're going to be growing if you're a cultivator, what strains, the amount of land that you're going to be growing on, and you're actually going to have minimum requirements that you're going to have to hit on those amounts of land. So when we're talking about cultivators, if you just wanted to grow some hemp in your backyard, you're probably not going to qualify for a license here. We are looking for companies and individuals to grow this on to scale, to really make this a legitimate market. And when we're talking about processors, we've got the same kind of requirements. You show up who your investors are, show what your business plan is, show what your capital requirements are. And the biggest change for processors, especially when we're comparing to the way the medical marijuana rolled out, is we don't have provisional licenses anymore. Okay, you either have a license or you don't have a license. The Department of Commerce and the Department and the Board of Pharmacy kind of threw everyone a bone when we were going through the medical marijuana program. They anticipated that because of the licensing process, because of how new everything was, people weren't going to be ready to be up and running right out of the gate. And so they gave provisional licenses, and then they came back and they checked up on you, made sure you were on track, and then eventually you could get your certificate of operation and you could go for it. That doesn't exist with these. Okay, you either have a license or you don't. You're either approved or you're not.
And I'm applying to the Department of Agriculture?
Yes, so the Department of Agriculture is the division that is going to be running the entire hemp program.
And when you said earlier that there is a low barrier to entry, anyone can apply. It's $100 fee?
It's $100 fee. There are, for your processor, it's another $500 for each thing that you're doing. So if you're processing fiber, if you're processing cellulose, if you're processing whatever, with another $3,000 fee if you're making CBD. But these are extremely low barriers in terms of the administrative barriers to entry on this.
In other words, you fill out the form, you pay the fee, you show them the business plan and the other items you mentioned, and you pretty much have a license.
Pretty much. Okay. As long as you got all that set, then the only barrier you're going to have if you're a processor is that your facility has to pass that final inspection, which is different from if you're a cultivator. You could potentially get a license without passing that final inspection, the way these regs are drafted.
And for folks that need help with that, is that something you can help them with, Nick?
Absolutely. Getting that license, you know, even though we have a substantially reduced barriers to entry here, isn't just checking in a box and, okay, yeah, now you can grow. We haven't seen what the applications look like yet. I suspect they're being drafted. But you're going to need an attorney's help with this. This is a brand new process here in Ohio. And you're going to need someone who is familiar with the industry, not only with the medical marijuana industry, but the hemp industry, and what the Department of Agriculture is going to want to see in order to give you your license.
Particularly, I'm thinking with that inspection.
Yes, that absolutely.
Nick, I am a processor or a cultivator. Who can I sell my hemp products to?
So if you're a cultivator, you can sell to the processors. And it doesn't have to be in state. That's the biggest advantage here. You can sell out of state as well. And, you know, you could sell directly to consumers. I don't know what the market is for consumers who just want raw hemp, but I guess conceivably you could do that. If you're a processor, your supply is from the cultivators. And your customers are the people who are taking your fine products. So that's the fiber, that's the cellulose, that's the whatever, and they're making things out of it. You are a business-to-business supplier.
That's the processor.
That's the processor, yeah.
So in the medical marijuana world, you're selling to dispensaries.
Right, that's exactly
in
right.
In the hemp world, who are those? Are they other processors?
That's any kind of manufacturer who is making things out of what you have processed, and you don't need specific licenses for that, or selling directly to the consumer market through retailers.
And what are some of the challenges that I'm going to have if I'm a cultivator or a processor with respect to other companies?
So your biggest risks as a cultivator are not necessarily going to come from losing your license here. They're going to come from, your general agricultural risks in growing any kind of agricultural product. So you're still going to have to deal with the issues surrounding getting insured for your product. The issues surrounding getting financing for your product, everything there. Financial institutions, insurance institutions, insurers are getting better at providing services for people in the cannabis business. But even with hemp, even where we have legalization on the federal level, legalization on the state level now, we have a lot of larger institutions that are unwilling to do business with you. Because of the risks around enforcing insurance agreements and the risks around the Bank Secrecy Act. It's not going to be nearly as difficult for you as the marijuana people, but you're still going to have some of those same barriers that you wouldn't otherwise have if you were in another industry.
What, Nick, are the risks that I have that I should be protecting myself from, and who is posing those risks to me?
So your risks as either a cultivator or a processor are going to come from largely the same sources that traditional businesses have. So you are still going to have to look through your agreements between your cultivators and processors, see what your vendors are offering, making sure that you are protected and that you are covered for all of those risks and all of those contracts. The other big one that you're going to have is through your employees. This is now a legal market, but it is an emerging legal market. And because a lot of the people who are starting up here are starting up with new businesses, things like having effective employee agreements, things like having effective employee handbooks and complying with your labor obligations, and we talked about this in other podcasts, where people in the cannabis business are falling down is not necessarily in complying with the regulations specific to cannabis. It's in the places where every business owner deals with risk and deals with threats to the business itself.
This is where our listeners should benefit from checking out covermy6.com, because there you will see the drill down into those relationships, Nick, that we were just talking about. The employees have employee handbook issues and application issues, hiring and firing practices, internal investigations. Your customers need a good customer agreement that protects the company from unneeded liability with good dispute resolution clauses. Your insurance agreement, your insurance policy needs a good review by a lawyer, not just an insurance agent. So if you go through each of those six buckets of exposure and relationships that CoverMy6 is designed to address, you will get the 360 degree coverage for your business, whether you are a cultivator or a processor or a dental office. I think your point, Nick, is that you are still a business and you have the same exposure and the same relationships that every other business has.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Now, you're a cool business, at least in my opinion, because I really like the industry. But yeah. But at the end of the day, you're a business, that's right. What you are.
What about funding, Nick? Are there any is there anything special about the kind of funding sources or types of funding that I can get as a hemp processor or a cultivator that's different from any other business?
So I'm going to give you the legal answer and I'm going to give you the practical answer. And the legal answer is no. You should be able to access traditional sources of funding, small business loans, private financial institutions, giving you whatever your seed money is, whatever your financing and all of that stuff. I'm going to give you the practical answer on top of that is you're still going to have trouble with that. You're still going to have trouble getting traditional financing because even though everyone's coming around slowly, you're still selling cannabis. You're still processing cannabis. Until a couple of months ago, this was all illegal in Ohio. I mean, we're going to see traditional financial institutions come around on this, I think, but it's still slow going.
We, in prior podcasts, talked about the limited number of lenders and banking facilities that are out there that are available to the cannabis industry. We mentioned one. There was a credit union.
Wright Pratt, yeah.
Well, Wright Pratt?
Mm-hmm.
So that is a more or less friendly lender to the cannabis and hemp industry. Is that a fair statement?
That's correct. They're the only ones who are openly advertising that they will service that industry.
And otherwise, I mean, just speaking as business lawyers, your options are the same options that are non-institutional that any business has. You've got private lenders, you've got mm-hmm. private equity, you've got your uncle down the street that has a lot of money and is looking to invest in something. Private person-to-person, business-to-business transactions, there's nothing wrong with them, and those are just as available to this industry as anywhere else, right?
That's absolutely true, and you know, honestly, this is a really good time to ask your uncle for that money.
Yeah.
This we don't have any legal hemp growers. We don't have any legal processors in Ohio right now, and we're about to have a whole bunch.
Yeah. Nick, where else can folks go? What groups should they know about or be a part of that can help them answer questions, get resources, get support, get help?
Sure. Well, I always shout out the Cannabis and Hemp Chamber of Commerce down in Columbus. If you want to be a cultivator, the Ohio Hemp Farmers Cooperative, I spoke with some of their representatives last month at a big get-together down in Delaware County. And they are a great source of information. Even if you are just a casual grower and you're just getting into this, they can get you their seeds. They can get you the information that you need. They can get you any kind of consulting. And because cultivating is the lowest barrier thing, this is one where If you just have a whole lot of land and you want to be an amateur grower, this is actually something that you could do.
Interesting. Nick, this has been super helpful. Where can folks find you?
Sure. So I'm available at the Gertzberg Law Firm. You can look me up. My direct line, and anyone can call it, is 440-528-1233. Email me at nweiss@gertzberglaw.com. Have any questions about the hemp or cannabis industry or the laws surrounding it, or you know, I'm happy to answer any questions that come my way. And if it's a really good question, I'm happy to put it on the podcast.
Awesome. Good stuff. Nick, thank you very much. Folks, thanks for listening. You will want to watch this space because there will be more opportunities to hear Nick talk about Ohio cannabis law in future podcast episodes just like this. So stay tuned and thanks.
These 10-minute legal talks are brought to you by the Gertzberg Law Firm, changing the character of the attorney-client relationship in business from a cost center to a trusted advisor. Drawing from their complex litigation and transactional experiences as members of large law firms, in-house counsel, and as business owners themselves, the Gertzberg Law Firm's award-winning attorneys provide clients the benefit of business lawyers with real-life business experience in a wide variety of industries. These talks are not intended to create an attorney-client relationship or to provide legal advice. If you have questions about your particular legal situation, you should contact a legal professional. To reach one of our business law or estate planning attorneys, visit www.gertzberglaw.com or call us at 440-571-7777.
See, the Jews, Nick, there's a word for this. The middle name of your firstborn son is your father's name. The first name you would use to honor somebody that has died. Mm-hmm. The Jews will never have Alexander Gertzberg II, right? Because if Alexander is the dad's name and he's still alive, right?
Yeah.
So in my case, my dad's name is Edward. So you can do the middle name. That's not bad luck. If you name someone after someone who's alive, that's bad luck with the Jews, right? But it's dark. Yeah, you
get all right.
If they're alive and you want to honor them, you make it the middle name of your kid.
Okay.
Right. The first name.
So no juniors. We don't do juniors.
Not if dad's alive when you're born.
Got it.
Right. But the middle name goes after a living person. That's the workaround. That's the shortcut around that rule. See. See how that works, right?
Some dad came up with that. That was definitely a dad decision.
See, and I can say this because I'm Jewish. I like to think that we Jews are kings of the loopholes.
I like that you just step into the lawyer stereotype with the Jews.
Yeah,
that's good.
Well, and you know what, Nick? I'll tell you. I feel like our radio shows here, our podcast shows, we don't skirt controversy.
Right.
We go right in, you know?